You're just, you know, you're just worried about feeding your family and paying your bills and all that other stuff. But then you get to a place where you're financially secure and you're like, oh my God, where did that weed come from? I see that weed on my grass. Oh my God, I've got it. Like, you start really concentrating on your grass and you start really
Okay.
concentrating on
You're like, I was so broke and then I found some weed. Like, so I didn't completely understand that.
No, oh, you're thinking weed.
Well,
I meant like weeds in my garden or weeds on my.
yes, I got with you eventually. I
Okay.
understood it.
This is where the party ends. I can't stand here listening to you and your racist friend. I know politics bore you, but I feel like a hypocrite talking to you and your racist friend.
And now it's time for my racist friend. A time for reflection. A time for joy. For laughter, for tears. I'm Don Griffin.
And I'm Amy McKees. And we're talking about the messy parts of relationships that help us grow together. There, we did it all.
So sit back and relax.
I think you need a second career as like an NPR guy.
Oh, you think so?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You just have to stop in the middle of sentences. Don Griffin was a realtor.
Oh my God. I always feel so much smarter after listening to NPR.
Do you?
Yeah, I really do.
Maybe I should try doing that. It's been a long time.
It's relaxing, especially on a Saturday and a Sunday. And it's funny. Some of it's funny. Some of it's. What's the one? Wait, wait, don't tell me.
Don't tell me.
I think that's hilarious. Mm-hmm. And then Hidden Brain.
I do like the Hidden Brain. I listen to the podcast.
Did you? We always hear someone from high school at the end that heard.
What?
Yes, it's Jennifer Munton is the technical person or something for the Hidden Brain. Hmm. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
First time I heard it, I was like, Jennifer Munton. Is that like Bloomington Jennifer Munton? And so I like sent her a message. I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. And she's like, thank you. So anyway.
You know, like it seems like things come up a lot at once.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like one that I keep hearing is boundaries. Boundaries, boundaries, boundaries.
In what respect? In the respect of creating boundaries for the space? See, I'd only thought of boundaries in one way until we had that first conversation about boundaries.
How did you think of them before that?
Hey, Don, you don't have many, you don't have enough boundaries. You don't have, you know, you either overstep your boundaries or let too many people, mostly let too many people mm-hmm. in that shouldn't be in your space.
Yeah.
So boundaries in that yeah. respect. And now, but this new version of boundaries that I'm
new
hearing
version of boundaries.
Is creating boundaries, creating a space where people can actually be comfortable in speaking truth and
yeah
that kind of thing. So it's the term boundaries is a positive now for me.
Yeah, I think it can be positive.
Yeah,
we're talking about like coming into work and being happy to see people. Like if you can say, oh, this is something that I need, or scoot over, or whatever it is that you need to say to be comfortable, then you can actually enjoy being around other people.
Mm-hmm.
You pick out three cards. It's
three?
Like a tarot card reading. Yeah.
That's the three right
okay.
there.
Now you have to put them out so we can see them.
Okay. So what am I doing here?
The one in the middle is the problem, and the two around it our information about that.
Is that really how that worked?
I just made it up.
I thought I understood these cards and now it's a game.
When you play with like tarot cards and stuff, you can do stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, see, I've never done that. Relational movement. I don't think that's anything we've ever talked about.
you know, we've talked about the one true thing, right? Mm-hmm. And when I think of the one true thing, I think of being able to say something that's true for you and that allows for movement in the relationship, right?
Okay.
So it doesn't like box the other person into a corner by saying that's stupid. And relational movement, I think of as being able to move within the relationship or the relationship itself moving.
Mm-hmm. Is this advanced? This concept, do you think this is advanced? You got to get the other step down before we can talk about this.
When we've been doing our RCT in practice stuff, we've sort of based everything that we do in the central relational paradox, which is the idea that you really need relationships. Mm-hmm. And so in order to stay in the relationships, because you've been hurt, because of things you've learned along the way, you hide parts of yourself that you've decided are too risky to share. And then the paradox is you don't get the relationship because you're hiding parts of yourself. We've used that as a starting place. And then all of these other things sort of come out of that pretty naturally. I've also heard people teach relational cultural theory by starting with the context where it emerged, you know, that it was a group of women talking about their experience as therapists in a world where they were trained mostly by men, mm-hmm. who were pathologizing things that were, you know, traditionally thought of as things women do, like tending to relationships or caring too much, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that. So I've heard it that way. And when you start there, then a lot of these other ideas sort of emerge differently. But I don't know that, I guess what I'm saying is I don't know that there's advanced. I think there's some that are a little bit heady.
Since we've been talking about this, should I read it?
Do you want to read it? Yeah.
Okay. Relational movement. Relationships are dynamic processes. They are always in movement toward either better connection or increasing disconnection. That shows that it can go either way.
Yes.
Which is nice. It's, hey, things, if we do this, things are going to get better because sometimes they can't.
Right. Then you feel bad because you thought I did the thing. Why didn't it get better?
Get better? Okay. So this is good. With a flow of mutual empathy, participants in a relationship move toward more connection, changing the relationship to make room for expansion.
Yeah. So the mutual empathy is the big piece there. But this is what I wrote about empathy. We're talking about mutual empathy in the relational movement. Empathy is a paradox, a sense of sameness and a sense of the particulars of others. Although you are joining, you are aware that you are being affected by the other. It involves emotion and cognition. It isn't just having the same experience. It's about sharing your experience of empathy. And at that moment, no one feels alone. And then underneath that, I wrote, isolation is one of the primary causes of human suffering. Anyway, I really liked that because there's lots of talk now about empathy and like, what does empathy mean? Like the difference between empathy and sympathy and the difference between empathy and compassion. And how do you have empathy for someone without being so swept away by their experience that you're not helpful? And I liked that because what she was saying there is that you are joining and you are experiencing what that person is experiencing while simultaneously being aware of your own experience and who you are.
I like that. The whole, there needs to be shared empathy.
Uh-huh. For relational movement.
For relational movement. If we're talking, you know, if mm-hmm. we're talking about being a good ally. Okay. Good ally, no matter what. That group is not asking you to be a hero.
Right.
Right.
Yes. Just to listen.
But also to the relationship grows when we have mutual empathy. Mm-hmm. When we're all in it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. When we're in it together.
When we're in it together.
And mutuality is one of my favorite words because the idea that we're both being moved by each other and experiencing moving the other person.
Mm-hmm. Because whether or not we know it, just because it's not happening to me, and it's happening to you, we're both suffering because as a community, we're not moving together. The only way we can get there, utopia, if that ever exists, but the only way we can actually get there is if we it together, we have to get there together.
Part of what makes us have these like rigid boundaries and not have relational movement is a fear of experiencing that suffering. Like, you don't want to open yourself up. You don't want to look at that person that's trying to talk to you when you're walking down the street, because it's uncomfortable at best, but also it's a reminder that kind of suffering is right there, right in front of you as a part of your community. So then you get sort of rigid.
Heck, nabbit, I hate where this is going. I'm going to tell you why.
Why?
Because it makes me look inside myself in a different way, the way we're talking. Like, Daryl Davis, the whole idea of him befriending racist and KKK members and Grand Dragons, it always bugged me. I have a dislike for that concept. You know what I mean? I just have a dislike for liking anybody that is about hate. So this conversation that we're talking about, if we're really digging into it, he's kind of right. What you're talking about, the person that's suffering on the sidelines that I'm trying to ignore, it's the racist. It somehow their hatred for others, there is something deep inside of that person that is hurting, that needs them to find other people to be subpar for them to keep living, for them not to see the darkness that's in their head.
Mm-hmm.
They need to believe these things.
I follow you. I
hate to follow it that way, but if we aren't...
I follow you, and I think that RCT has something useful to add to that particular conversation.
Okay.
Which is that relational cultural theory looks at power in a relationship as well. And so when you're talking about the KKK specifically, you're talking about a group of white people who had power and who were terrified of losing power and abused their power to take the terror out of them and put it on other people.
Sure.
So RCT is not saying empathize with their use of power. RCT is saying you can empathize with fear. You can be like, wow, that person's really scared. And you can insist. And that's where boundaries come in, right? Because me saying, sure, go ahead and have a racist barbecue in my front yard, that's okay with me. I want to be friendly.
Oh, hell done.
Yes, right. I don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. You can say, I understand that you're scared. Mm-hmm. Here's some resources. And I'm not going to engage in a conversation that is this hurtful. And then you can move. But that still involves seeing the person.
Okay.
And for the record, I was talking about seeing unhoused people.
I know you were.
Okay.
I know exactly what you were saying. Yeah. But then when you were talking about someone that's hurting and us and trying to ignore it.
Yeah.
It's a different type of hurt, but it's...
They're scary and they're scared. They're both.
They're a little bit of both.
Yeah.
But the con game is that whatever has been going badly for them...
Mm-hmm.
It's all about foreigners. It's all about black people. It's all about Jewish people. It's all about women. It's all about trans. It's not about them. Mm-hmm. Someone is convincing them, not just Trump, but other people are convincing them that the people who are actually making their lives worse have convinced them that it's about us. And it's not. That we're taking the jobs, that we're taking, you know.
And so then when there's that much fear, then there's not relational movement.
It gives us the opportunity to reach out to create this movement that we can either connect or it doesn't work and we can then disconnect.
You can look through the building and find some lovely circles that Kevin has drawn about the cycle of connecting, disconnecting, reconnecting, and that it is normal in most relationships.
Well, you can go back. You could
to disconnect. Yes.
So it's not a complete, like, you don't write anyone. You don't have to write someone off.
Mm-mm. You can say, what you're doing hurts me. I'm not going to engage with it. I care about you and I'm open to discussing this down the line. When you can, you know, meet my needs for safety in this conversation.
You know what? I just now have a great idea. You could take this, put it on some t-shirts, the whole image.
Uh-huh.
And sell these right before Thanksgiving so that people can wear them when they go home. Thank you.
Then the other people are going to be wearing their, I drink 28 bottles of water a day. Ask me how.
I'm just saying, this will let people go into the holidays thinking, okay, I can do this. I'm going to reach back out to my uncle or my granddad or whatever, right? Mm. And if it doesn't work out, I can go let it go. Maybe come back 12 months. Maybe it's going to be 24 months, but I don't know. A lot of people can actually use this advice.
Yes. Yes, I think so. I think, like, the opposite of movement is stuck, right?
Mm-hmm.
And stuck is not a place anyone wants to be.
Yet if you write too many people off.
Isolation is the glue that holds oppression in place.
There you go. That means we're not talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing gets changed. Because no new ideas are coming forward. See, Kevin? We got there. We actually talked about something.
We did. What were the other cards?
Okay, let's see what else we got.
The relational movement is our center one. I'm putting it right there.
We have calm and we have guilt.
Oh, interesting. Dang.
Yeah, I know.
I like guilt.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I'm okay. Weird that way, but I like guilt because I think it can help you do better. At least the way it makes sense to me is to separate it out from shame. Guilt being, wow, I did a shitty thing. I'm going to try not to do that again, or I'm going to try to make it right. I'm going to learn from this experience. But shame is more, I'm ashamed of the basic essence of who I am and think that I'm unlovable.
Okay. Yeah. I see how you have separated the guilt from the shame. That's okay. You want me to read this whole thing?
Did I say everything that's on there?
I mean, you wrote this, so, right?
Predictable.
Yes. Okay. Guilt is a feeling of responsibility or remorse for some offense or wrong, whether real or imagined. It is often associated with discrete acts of transgression or violations of standards. By contrast, shame is a sense of being inherently unworthy of connection and can be immobilizing.
So I can feel guilty when I learn that a phrase I've been saying turns out to hurt people, like lots of phrases that you and I have, I'm sure, said over the years, and then come to a place where we're like, oh, we don't use that term anymore. And I can feel guilty about it, and then I can do better. Or I can realize that assumptions that I was holding are steeped in, like, our own history of racism that I couldn't even see until I started really looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's entirely reasonable to feel guilty about that and then to push myself to learn more and to do better. And that's to me, great.
Big.
Yeah. But if I, someone who thinks I could never be racist, I could never be any bad things, and then you say, hey, Amy, that phrase, it's derived from this racist thing, and I can't quite line that up in my head with my idea that I can never be racist, and then I fall into this, like, spiral of shame where I'm like, oh my God, I'm unworthy of being in community because I can't even do this right. Or you're like, that isn't racist. You're a jerk for calling me a racist. And then you protect yourself from that spiral of shame by being really rigid.
So guilt is pretty big. Being able to accept guilt but not shame.
Yes.
Is really big in growth.
I think so. Yeah.
And it's that whole idea of being human, not understanding that we're not perfect and being okay with not being perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that we're going to continually grow. That helps. I mean, that helps. We can have honest conversations without feeling like we're going to trip up and say something that's going to hurt the other person or hurt anybody that's listening.
When we learn about it, we're going to try to make it right.
And be like, hey, we screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
To do that, you have to be open to criticism, open to hearing that.
Which is hard.
Damn, I'm wrong.
Yeah. And that's really hard. Like, and I would say, like, in therapy, it's both, like, essential for therapy to go well, mm-hmm. is that, like, the client has to be able to say, whoa, you got that wrong, or I can't learn and then do better. But also, I have to be open to, whoa, when I said that, I really, like, I said something and I saw that person's face change, and it's clear that what I said hurt, and I don't even exactly know why, but I am here and I am ready to learn. Instead of being like, oh, you misinterpreted me, that's not what I meant, be like, wow, that hurt. Let's work on repair.
See? You're a genius.
That was not the conclusion I was going to read.
Genius.
Yeah, so how does guilt connect to relational movement? It allows for movement, whereas shame gets you rigid and down and unable to move. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to paraphrase the author of this card,
mm-hmm. Which is,
by contrast, shame is a sense of being inherently unworthy of connection and can be immobilizing.
Yeah.
Who wrote that?
I don't know.
All right. So the other card was calm. Do you want to tell us what calm
is? I can, because calm is a part of like a set of cards that goes, they all go with the book Wired to Connect by Amy Banks.
Okay.
I highly recommend this book. I like it because it's accessible and takes some mental health ideas and operationalizes them so that you can feel better, really. So she has the like pathways of the brain that lead to feeling better, and it's called the CARE system, and the C stands for calm. The A stands for accepted, the R stands for resonance, and the E stands for energy. So this is the calm card, which is the C in care. And the calm part is being able to experience a sense of calm that you can get from the people who are growth fostering relationships in your relation in your life. So the story that I think of in her book is of someone going to a Christmas party and they didn't want to go. It's like a work party and they're like, oh, I don't want to go. I don't like anybody. It's a new job. I feel like I don't fit in yet. And they're at the party and they're looking around and everyone they see, they're like, see, Don's looking at me funny and nobody wants to talk to me. And this is so uncomfortable. And then they see the one person at work that they've really made a strong connection with. You see someone that you know likes you, that you know you like, that has this calming influence on you, and suddenly the rest of the people don't look as
scary
or mean. It doesn't look like they're talking about you. It looks like they're just people too. And then it's easier for relational movement.
What if you start to notice that other people, they're not connecting? They haven't connected yet. And you become that person.
Yeah.
That starts to make those connections with those people that are feeling alone.
Mm-hmm. We actually did an interview with at the time he was a sixth grader, I think, or a seventh grader, on like, we were doing the SIFTs, where you like try to get at the implicit skills that people have that they can't really describe because they do them so well, mm-hmm. but it just is sort of natural. And his skill was basically what you just described. And the example that he gave was, if I were on the school playground and a new kid came up that looked like he didn't know anyone, what would I do? I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. It was so dear. Yeah. So, yeah, you could become that person, is my point.
Yeah. Actually, I love that. All right. Do you want me to read this?
Or no? I mean, you can.
You kind of said everything. I mean, I'll read it anyway. So that I can at least have a part. I need a part to play. If not, I'm just here. I'm just here for eye candy. Okay. As used in the care system, calm is a feeling present when your brain senses you're safe. When we are able to experience safety, we have fuller access to healing. That's pretty deep.
Well, it is. And it makes me think about having the conversations about racism and what can make those conversations feel, how we could create safety in those conversations, because those are risky, inherently risky conversations. So how do we create a sense of safety?
Yeah. If you don't feel safe, you're not going to put yourself out there.
Mm-hmm.
When we are able to experience safety, we have fuller access to healing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. It's good. It's a good sentence.
Well, and it's so important. Like during our last summit, when Amy, like every single like little breakout session we had, someone would bring in like a case study and be like, so Amy, this thing happened and this was really hard. And her answer was almost always, okay, wait, walk it back. How do we create a safe place for this person? What does this person need to feel safe?
This episode of My Racist Friend is a production of the Bloomington Center for Connection, an organization using relational cultural theory to promote social change through connection. This conversation between Don Griffin Jr. and Amy McKeese, LCSW, took place on March 11, 2024 in Bloomington, Indiana, and was edited for this podcast by Kevin McKeese. Theme music lovingly sampled from Your Racist Friend by They Might Be Giants. Follow Bloomington Center for Connection on Facebook and other social media platforms. You and your racist friend.
Look at this.
What am I looking at?
This is my notebook from my very first RCT conference. It's really old.
What did it say? Door County?
Door County Summer Institute.
There really is a Door County?
Oh, yeah. In Wisconsin. It's like Nashville, Indiana on steroids.
Huh.
With more lakes and even prettier, like breathtakingly beautiful. And every store is full of like...
doors? It's got a lot of doors.
Door County? Is that what you were doing?
Yes, I was.
Oh my God.